Check seatbelt. Check wing mirrors.
Okay.
Make sure clutch is depressed before starting engine. You may now drive off. Check car radio.
Mr. Tambourine Man! Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
I'm Jay.
And I, yes, I am...
Quite wonderful, really.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. I think you're quite squeezable too.
Did I say squeezable? I did not say you were squeezable. I said you were wonderful.
Okay.
And you ruined it.
You're magnificent. You are my goddess. You are my reason for being. You are the...
You two leave it at home, please.
You're my huggy squeezy toy.
We are Scottless tonight.
Yeah. We are. Scott has a nasty cough.
He does.
Which he's given to me by the sounds of it.
He's like a Russian tennis player. He says, I have a tickly chesty cough.
Anyway, without further ado, driverless cars besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Doctor Who news.
Oh, yep.
Big Finish gets extension.
Ooh. Ooh.
Damn, this was my addendum.
Well, this is where you're reading it out now.
It is. Big Finish have proudly announced unto the world that their license for Doctor Who audio-mongery has been embiggened until the end of the Earth year 2035. Ooh. BBC Studios Director of Books and Audio, Jan Peterson, said...
Big Finish has played a pivotal role in expanding the Doctor Who universe for more than 25 years, consistently delivering stories that honour the legacy of Doctor Who and bringing fans new adventures that are imaginative, bold and full of heart. We're incredibly proud to continue this journey together and look forward to seeing and hearing where their creativity takes the Doctor next.
Big Finish's Nick Briggs also gushed.
We have been telling Doctor Who stories for over a quarter of a century now. And the joy that it still feels like we're only just getting started. One of my favourite aspects of Doctor Who is that it never runs out of space and time to explore.
Poke him! Somebody poke him!
Eternity and the universe create a limitless canvas to work on.
Big Finish are now entering the realms of lasting longer than Classic Who. Ooh. But how many Doctors might they outlive in the next 10 years? You are such a depressing what a thing to say.
Well, especially with the third item of news business here.
Fake news.
Stranger Things. Animated series dated.
Already?
Oh,
I thought it was quite new.
The new animated series Stranger Things : Tales from 85 has been dated. The 23rd of April, and not in 3 years' time, but this very year.
Woo!
The series features the same Hawkins characters we all know, but recast with new voice actors. It is set between seasons 2 and 3 of the original series. According to Netflix, the basic premise is...
In the winter of 1985, snow blankets the town, and the horrors of the Upside Down are finally fading. Our heroes, Eleven, Mike, Will, Dustin, Lucas and Max, have settled back into a normal life of D&D, snowball fights and quiet days. But beneath the ice, something terrifying has awakened. Could it be from the Upside Down, from the depths of Hawkins' lab, or from somewhere else entirely? Our heroes must race to solve this mystery and save Hawkins in this untold story set in the Stranger Things universe.
It is currently unknown how many episodes there will be or what duration they are targeting. Given they are said to be heavily influenced by 80s and 90s cartoons such as The Real Ghostbusters, we can probably expect episodes closer to 22 minutes rather than 3 hours. I don't know of many episodes that are 3 hours long.
Wasn't that last one?
The last one was closed.
So is this a cartoony thing?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. Have they said anything about the voices?
We have got a bunch of actors named, but nobody would recognise them.
So none of the originals?
None of the original cast.
Interesting. Could be fun, could be bad.
I've seen production stills. I like the artwork,
the art style.
Yeah,
CG animated.
Yeah.
Oh. Any more news, Crumbly?
Do I have to?
Yes, you do.
No, you can just read that one.
I think that's a space filler.
Yes.
Yes, a little bit suspect about that third article.
Read it anyway. Peter Davison.
Dead.
His musical career is officially dead after he performs the Button Room theme tune live to an audience he trapped in a convention toilet. He savagely bogged-washed those brave souls who tried to stop him and performed unspeakable acts with a tin of baked beans and a funnel.
I don't think that actually happened, did it?
Is it Gallifrey this week?
It was Gallifrey this week. I have been very jealous looking at photos on Facebook.
Wait, is it this week? Gallifrey?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be next week.
No,
it's just this weekend.
It's this weekend.
Oh, really? Because it was normally President's Day weekend, and that's next weekend.
Well, if it's not, they've had a sort of a fake convention. Yeah. Something. You know, Millie Gibson was signing a Dalek.
AI. It's AI.
It's AI. Probably. Right?
I didn't realise they had changed their dates.
So that one probably wasn't true, was it, Crumbly?
No.
Hang your head.
Where?
Over there.
Okay.
Any addendums?
I have two. Count them. Two addendums.
What is your first addendum, you insane brick of a man?
I was your huggy squeezy toy a few minutes ago.
That's before you did the laugh.
Oh, okay.
Our allegiances change.
Addendum one. HBO is developing a TV adaptation of Lauren Studios' Baldur's Gate 3.
I told you that.
I know. I nicked it.
Oh, man.
HBO, so is it going to be full of smut?
Quite probably. It's being done or being co-created by Craig Marsden, who was the guy in charge of Chernobyl and The Last of Us.
The series.
Yeah. He didn't cause it to blow up.
Good God, woman.
Sorry, it's been a long day.
I was wondering as well.
But you had the sense not to vocalise your wonder.
Well, yes.
Yep. After putting nearly 1,000 hours into the incredible world of Baldur's Gate 3, it is a dream come true to be able to continue the story that Lauren and Wizards of the Coast created, says Marsden.
Heard great things about the game. I've got a copy.
It is.
I've not actually played it.
I haven't played it in a while, but it is very good.
I keep dabbling with it every now and again. But
got it on
what
Steam.
Is your addendum the second?
My addendum the second is, hang on, I've got to call it up. Where are we? Star Trek figures. You know you have the, I'm not sure, but the action figures.
Yes.
Well, recently a company called Nacelle has stepped into the Star Trek figure range, mm-hmm. and are bringing out the classic series, the original series figures. Mm-hmm. What has made this particularly interesting for me is they're also bringing out as a display for them. Mm. It's sold separately,
or
but
a diorama.
A diorama of the bridge set.
Uh-huh.
So you can
put your little figures
you
where
can
they...
put, well, the thing is, you can put your little figure in its station on the bridge set, but you can also collect the whole bridge. They lock together.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Have you told everybody what your current quest is?
No.
Tell everybody what your current quest is.
I am currently watching Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
The entirety of Star Trek in chronological order.
Oh, we have had a discussion about this, and I feel he's got his order wrong, because Voyage Home should be probably the first one, because Piece of the Action was on a different planet. Voyage Home is 1984.
Yes. Well,
so chronologically, yes, that happened first.
But again, I am watching it from the character's point of view.
Oh, it's a release order.
I tried that.
No, not
with
not release order in chronological. So starting with Enterprise.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I still say Voyage Home should be first.
That is more set in the 80s than it is in the 23rd century.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it would, that is in the character's point of view. So if we're sticking with that, then it would be Kirk starting in the 23rd century,
dear,
that travels back to the...
If Keith is watching Star Trek in chronological order, do you think he should start with The Voyage Home because that's set in 1984? Or do you agree with his twisted reasoning that he just has to start with Enterprise?
So Voyage Home and then First Contact.
Yeah.
Like I say, First Contact, if you ignore Voyage Home, if you say, well, that's time travel, First Contact has to be the first point.
No, you can't ignore Voyage Home.
Again, it's First Contact was after Voyage Home.
I know.
Yeah.
But if you say Voyage Home, time travel backwards. Well, but
First Contact was the beginning of the Federation.
But then you had them going back to the 60s in the original series. What was that episode?
Yeah, you've got them going back to the 60s in the original series. You've got them going back to the 20s in DS9. Yeah. So that's why I'm watching it from character point of view.
No, in that case, it's even more convoluted.
You've got the one. Was that, you talking about the Ferengi one?
No.
There was that one with Quark and...
That was 1950s.
Yes.
There is a scene where...
Little Green Men.
Yeah.
I think
see what you've done now, Karen.
In DS9 with the Bell riots, you initially have Kira and O'Brien beaming down briefly for a couple of scenes in 1920s.
Thing was...
They're trying to track them down.
The 1960s episode sort of featured Gary Seven more than the...
That was a spin-off.
Well, Time's Arrow, that's back in the 18...
Data's head got buried.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this, you're going to do it properly.
But I'm doing it from the character's point of view.
Well, from Data's point of view, it started...
but he started...
Guinan was there from her point of view... First time.
There was also the one with Guardian of Tomorrow when McCoy went back as well.
But that was a different planet.
That was back to Edith Collins.
So have we completely ruined the new quest that you have lovingly set yourself?
No, I am still going to do it according to my rules and ignore everyone else.
The question is, have you set yourself a timeline?
He wants to do it before he dies.
I understand where you're coming from, because you've got the Kelvin universe. That would be a sidestep.
But that's only four movies. Yeah. Well, three movies. Yeah.
Why do I have a feeling I'd be more successful at running through all of the Doctor Who stories from beginning to the latest one twice before he's figured this out?
I've figured it out. You're the one who's having the arguments.
There's going to be so much to watch when you get to next-gen DS9. Voyage.
And then if you want to do that, Gene, do you want to do them in that same chronological way that Karen's suggested?
Anyway,
at the moment I am watching one episode in my lunch hour.
Anyway, while Keith's been watching that, the rest of us and Keith have been watching something else. We've been watching Starfleet Academy. Pause for music. Okay, we have a bit of a problem. There's nothing about the last two episodes that I don't like.
Oh.
I've adored them. The Benjamin Sisko episode actually made me tear up.
It was quite good, though.
This series is freaking phenomenal.
I wasn't quite so taken with the first of the two. It's the Klingon one.
Out of the two, it was probably the weaker one, but it still was pretty good.
It's okay.
I actually enjoyed that one, because I like the fact that up until now, the Klingons have intermittently been the bad guy. They are the Daleks to the Starfleet Gallifreyans kind of style. They're the main adversary out there. And that's now been taken away. So it's given the whole thing impetus to find new new villains.
There is no new villain, is there, really?
Yeah, that's going to come out. I mean, well, we'll go on to that on the second part.
We kind of have new villains in the form of things like the Emerald Chain, which was the Orions from Discovery, and also this new one, which, I can't remember the name of the organisation, but it was what Paul Giamatti's character was behind.
The ones that kept threatening Beta Z.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Yeah. Mm. They seemed like small-time villains compared to some of the classics.
But... I mean, it's a useful story in which it fleshes out Jaden's character a bit. Mm.
Yeah, these two are all about fleshing out some of the...
character development.
Yeah, some of the characters we haven't seen too much of yet.
And we haven't seen any Klingons in the 32nd century since Discovery moved to this time period.
This is the first time
that we find out just what has happened to the Klingon Empire, and boy, how they've fallen. It's just
beyond
belief. Keith is feeling incredibly smug because this is what he said would happen in the last podcast.
He did. And I hadn't seen it by then. I didn't know anything.
Well, no, I don't think
that means all Kronos is now a smouldering heap.
Yes.
Shades of Star Trek 6.
In some ways it does kind of go on a little bit from Star Trek 6, where Praxis exploded because they were mining dilithium too much, and in the time of the burn, all the dilithium exploded, the Klingons were heavily dependent on dilithium reactors to power their planet, and it pretty much wiped out the planet. Mm. And they weren't the only ones, apparently. There were other civilizations that... They did mention that there were some others as well, but the Klingons seemed to be the worst affected. Yeah, and now there's only 8 Klingon houses remaining.
I mean, as mentioned, the main sort of emphasis is placed on the Klingon diaspora. Mm. Mm. I mean, they're literally sort of scattered to the four winds.
Yeah.
Mm. But Jaden's brother was a good guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, he understood his brother from day one and didn't belittle him for it, for anything.
I like the fact that, although you don't realise it, but then it's explained to Jaden, his father got it. Yeah. But didn't like it. Yeah.
He didn't know how to deal with it.
It was still match. Yeah.
Yeah, he was too hidebound in ritual.
Mm. Yeah.
But I quite enjoyed this. I liked the whole bit of the debating, because, you know, Klingons, big, burly, and collapsed at the thought of talking publicly.
He was not happy, was he?
He was not happy, but overcomes that. And I thought this was quite an interesting one, quite a clever way in actually bringing the debate forward, and how everyone's trying to placate him, and he's the one saying, no, actually, we need to stand on our own 2 feet.
Because Caleb knew exactly what he was doing getting him so frustrated that he would defend himself.
What I did like is also, I can't remember the guy's name, but the other jock, yes, it was to annoy Caleb, but also helped Jaden understand and try to overcome his
fear.
And also it seems like Darum has a bit of a thing for Jaden as well.
Yeah. But I liked the way they come about it, in that the Klingons needed this planet, but are not going to accept charity.
Yeah, I saw that
and I did love the kind of like mock battle, which is all
everyone's phases and that were on stun.
But honour was seen to be that.
The Starfleet side were aiming to miss, and the Klingons had their disruptors set on low, because after several hits, the Athena's shields were only at 95%. That's like, you're not really doing a lot of damage here.
For me, it was the look on the Klingon commander's face.
The slight smile.
Yes.
It was a token gesture, but a gesture that needed to be done.
Yeah.
Honour was satisfied.
That's the point.
And I like the fact that it isn't just about the pupils. You have Fox. Can't pronounce the name. Yasha, Jeannie Yasha's character.
Jeannie Yashere.
Lorathok.
Yeah. I liked her little bit of character development as well with Jaden. So it's also the teachers we're finding out a bit about as well.
Yeah, it was nice to see more of her Klingon side come out, because right now I think we'd seen a little bit too much of the Jem'Hadar side. I mean, that's certainly more apparent in her appearance.
Yeah, I can't see any Klingon in her at all. I'm sure there must be. But...
I agree with you, but I'm not sure there's too much of a difference between a Klingon and the Jem'Hadar side.
That's why they work so well together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah!
Not bleeding and dead, you haven't worked hard enough.
But it's something that I clocked, and back to a minor complaint of yours last podcast is the fact that they use the Starfleet emblem a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
I don't know if you've noticed, but Thok's uniform has a very miniature Klingon emblem all over it.
Mm. I wonder, our American friends, do you think it's because in the States you do use the Stars and Stripes a lot more aggressively than we do the Union Jack? Many houses over there have the flags
and
outside.
Don't have to worship the flag every morning at school.
Yeah,
or
you
whatever.
Have to pledge allegiance.
I'm going to say, as someone who's been in North America, not the US. I mean, I was living in the US for 6 years, but as probably the closest thing you have to do an American here right now, I'm going to say I don't quite think it's that. I don't think it's that same level of patriotism that you have there. I think it's more a case of the set designers and the costume designers really just trying to throw it into everything they can.
Fair enough.
I still maintain Thok should have that all-important vial of Ketracil White on her.
They've progressed past it.
It's been 800 years. They've been able to work past that.
Like I said last time, you also, at the end of DS9, had Odo in charge. Mm. And do you think he's going to let
that?
The
whole purpose of it was control. Give them a drug they're so dependent on.
That's it. Yeah. They are no longer in control.
Mm, yeah.
They're now their own people.
I did like the poor doctor losing total control of the debate with his little clicker. Stop!
But the standout one was definitely
the next one.
Yeah, Benjamin Sisko one.
Series Acclamation Mill.
Yeah.
There's on Instagram, Tawny Newsom had put up a video of the actress who plays Sam wrapped up in her coat and hat talking to Avery Brooks on the phone.
Really?
Who was giving her a pep talk and passing the baton onto her. But yeah, this one made me sort of well up a few times, especially when Kirk Lofton showed up.
I was reading a lot of interviews and stuff about this episode that Tawny Newsom gave, and yes, this was heavily done in partnership between Cirroc Lofton and he was their interface between the showrunners and Avery Brooks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they still keep in contact. And this is really Tawny Newsom's love letter to DS9.
Yes, completely.
Put onto screen. I mean, this was her baby. Apparently, again, this is from interviews that I read, when it came to talk about this episode, they were talking about Sam being an emissary from the other world. And at that point, Tawny just raised up her hand and said, right, I know what we want to do and bring it into the emissary side of things from DS9.
Mm, yeah.
And that's pretty much how that kicked off.
I was so glad that they had him speaking at the end. His poetry at the end.
Yeah.
Because they didn't use his image at all. It was all outline.
Mm. Yeah. No, I was a little bit puzzled by that because, I saw it as a tribute episode to Avery Brooks. But when I went on Wikipedia to find out he was still sort of hale and hearty and not...
And the first thing is, when I said, thanks, Avery Brooks, had he died? I looked it up.
I looked at Peter and said, has he died?
No.
It's my understanding that Mr. Brooks has stepped away from acting in general. And was slightly upset about the ending of DS9.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
He didn't like the fact that it was once again a portrayal of a black man abandoning his pregnant wife and children.
Oh, wow, okay. Mm,
yeah. That's what put his nose out of joint, and it's one of the reasons why he's stepped back from acting in general.
Wow, okay. Mm.
And so I think this more than makes up for it. You have Jake mentioning that he always sensed his father.
But I think it's also not having images and fitted in with the storyline here, because he'd almost become like a messiah, not just a prophet.
He was,
and they stopped doing images of him.
Yeah.
Mm. So realistically, not having an image of him meant that he looks like whatever anyone thinks of. And I quite like that fact that you've only got the outline, because it kept him with that idea that they don't have an image of him
in many ways. That's kind of keeping with almost Islam.
Well, yeah,
idolatry. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense for Starfleet's records.
No.
But certainly for Bajorans. Okay.
But then maybe it depends how many Bajorans are in Starfleet.
Quite a few, it seems.
Going back to what you were saying about the stereotypical image of a black man walking away from his family, to me it wasn't like that at all. Well, I wouldn't say it had the face of the universe on his shoulders, but I mean, sort of, he was battling Gul Dukat, who was possessed by the Par Wraith.
Yeah. But you're not a black man, so you haven't had the experiences that Avery Brooks had as an actor and as a man, so it's perfectly reasonable for him to have the impression he got.
Yeah.
Because to him, that's just, here we go again, I'm, you know.
I've been cast in this light yet again.
Yeah.
I presume the audio of him is taken from
it's,
DS9.
It's actually from a spoken word CD called Here that was published in 2006. Yeah. And that was given to the production staff by Surok.
Okay.
So it's Avery Brooks wrote the poem he was reciting, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So he didn't do it especially for this.
No.
It is him. It is his voice.
Oh, I'm sure it's his voice. Yeah. I thought it was taken from DS9, but okay.
But yeah, the thank you, Avery, at the end.
Yes. Yeah, I thought I would do.
And we actually see a hardbound copy of Anslem.
We do. Yeah.
Yes.
Another thing I'd like to point out is Ilya Dax.
Yes.
Yes. We got I didn't recognise it as Tawny Newsom. The makeup was wonderful.
I was kind of thinking it looked very similar to her.
But when she was talking to Sam and then said, "And Benjamin," we both looked at each other. She called him Benjamin.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on that, but yeah.
Well, again, it was the way she was standing, the way she was walking, hands clasped behind
her back.
I'd watch it now, I'd probably pick up on it. Yeah.
Which is exactly as Jadzia used to walk, which apparently was how Dax's second host used to walk.
Is Esri Dax?
Esri Dax, yeah.
Did she do the same thing?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, at least briefly.
Yes, or to paraphrase your favourite quote from DS9, "Oh, she got a worm in her belly!"
But I liked seeing Sam take control. She started off when talking to her people.
Yes.
Yeah. She,
you picked up on that as well. Yes, I was thinking very much the Mort calling Orson
it
thing.
It was completely
wrong. Yeah. She started off timid and frightened, but by the end of it, she was like, "No, bitches, this is what's going to happen."
She actually cut the whole contact.
Actually, my first thoughts were, "Incoming message from the big giant head."
Which probably a riff on the.
One of the things that we were saying about, I said about not having a major enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sneaky feeling that the peoples that she comes from, and I use the words peoples.
Oh, the cask.
The cask.
Yes.
May turn out to be not quite as squeaky clean and nice as we think they are.
I don't think they're nice at all. I think they're horrible.
And I think that they're going to turn out to be quite an adversary to Starfleet.
You think they're going to try and take Sam and Starfleet has to defend her?
Well, kind of, but I think the whole thing with Sam's character slowly growing to actually become independent of them is part of that, in that she will go to the Federation side rather than the cask side.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that as a thread that's going to come out, because they're not humane, so to speak. And I know that's because it's machine logic and all the rest of it.
They don't have emotions, do they?
But there's that point at which, do they decide, because they've been done bad by humans, is there a point at which they decide, we're going to do bad against humans?
That sounds very much like the Kalons in the Orville.
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty much their whole reason for kind of turning against people there.
I see. So how did she work? Because she's effectively a hard light hologram.
Yeah.
Does she have a little light bee?
Well,
where's her
light Rimmer.
Yeah.
May do. We haven't seen that.
Talking of Rimmer, that's definitely Commander Kelrick.
In his B5 uniform.
Yeah.
You were right, by the way. I looked. You were right.
Yeah.
Oh, and the practice, the dry run for the feast.
War Council.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
What are those little megaphone thingies?
That was wonderful.
I suppose it's part of the ceremony.
I suppose it's like a speaking stick or something like that. Oh.
Yeah.
Or the conch.
The blobfish.
Oh, the blobfish was amazing. It deflated at an inconvenient moment.
This certainly was I think the comedic episode of the season. I mean, we've seen that with things like Strange New Worlds. There's been comedic episodes every season, and yeah, this one I'd say very much was Academy's.
Yeah,
but
it had all the heart.
That's what made it such a good episode. You had both.
Yeah,
you had this funny stuff going on in the background while everyone else was having their hearts wrenched out.
Although I could do without some of the particular jokes that were done there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. There was one about a debater.
Right.
Yes, and there was the other one that the digital dean said about Wood in the morning.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, he picked up on the morning. No.
Yes.
Those
seemed a little bit crass.
Well, on that one, I have to say, he said it, and then you actually heard the giggles. Yeah, so well, that one was genuinely...
It is Police Academy.
It's a bunch of teenagers, for want of a better...
Yeah. I was very pleased that DS9 got its moment in the sun, because you don't hear much about it. Next Gen is held up really highly, particularly in things like Lower Decks, stuff like that. But DS9 doesn't really get much limelight.
DS9 is my favourite of all Trek.
It's the slightly embarrassing middle child. It shouldn't be.
One thing that does surprise me about Starfleet Academy is the use of the S word and other sort of mold expletives. I mean,
they the filter's off.
Yeah.
They've never gone full but you know.
Oh no.
Talking of the humour, I did love the fact that they got Sam drunk.
Well, she did it herself, didn't she?
Oh hell! And the fact she kept zapping into
and obligatory bar fight.
You have to have a bar fight.
Yeah, she was having an absolute blast that episode,
especially as it was where Sisko had been, and he had a bar fight too.
It was Vulcans, if I remember rightly.
It was. Yeah. They've all had, because Picard also, because that's how he got stabbed.
Yeah,
that was his was with Norsecans.
I don't know if it was there, but
always has to take it too far, Picard. Right, we would love to know what you guys think or have thought of the first few episodes of Academy. We love it. So write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Right, from one epic series to another epic series. We've been tuning into those audio mongers at Big Finish for some Doctor Who. Pause for music.
Right, this one is called The Last Days of the Powell Estate.
Oh, that doesn't sound a happy thing.
Sounds pretty ominous.
It does.
I would just like to say here and now, I loved it. Creepy pasta.
I loved it too. Definite creepy pasta.
Mm.
Creepy pasta.
Oh, if you know, you know.
Okay. I definitely don't.
Look up creepy pasta.
Creepy pasta.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like the fact they started off saying, back here in London again for another adventure. equivalent to that.
Yeah.
But it was actually him in his, what do they call it?
He was doing a kind of like influencer.
Wait, YouTube. He had a weird name for it.
See, I haven't heard the first one. So it differs. Okay. Me for a moment as to what's going on.
Then I know who it is.
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily know who it is, but I quickly figured out this was some kind of like ghost hunt type blog thing.
Yeah, this doesn't really have any bearing on the previous episode at all.
No.
The previous episode gets once, but that's only in passing.
It is basically, we start off with an urban explorer with his drone going over the decimated Powell Estate in, was it 2036, where the estate itself has just been left to rot and ruin. Except for a couple of flats. And no one is there looking after the place. No one has decided to tear it down for the real estate because it's the centre of London. It has just been left.
No one wants to touch it with a 20-foot pole.
Yes, deserted.
Well, maybe even a 40-foot pole.
Or even that.
And then we are then introduced to the Doctor and Rose, who are are lost, basically. They are not sure what time there is, the date, or even where they are exactly.
He knows he's in London.
Yeah, yeah.
Some confluence or something in time.
Yeah, something's happened in the time, in the vortex, and has just booted the TARDIS out into this place.
This is after Father's Day.
Yes.
Because it gets reference, but it's obviously nowhere near Bad Wolf and that kind of side of things.
And we also have Jackie Tyler and her friend Beth.
Back in the present day, which was 2006 at this point in time, we have the flip side of it with Jackie and the marvellous Brainy Betty. I think she was actually in Aliens of London. I'm not sure if it's the same actress, but it's certainly the same attitude.
No. Someone owes Mickey an apology.
Mandy that Simmons.
You just hear the voice and someone owes Mickey an apology when he walks into the crowd.
I like the whole thing about, you know, the being the shadows and the hand.
Yes, Mr. Fingers.
Mr. Fingers. And I have to say, when I first heard that, you've read The Midnight Mare. I just had the words, make me a shadow upon the wall, go through my head. It's like, there's a character in The Midnight Mare that just makes people disappear and all you've got left is a shadow creepily on the walls. And
or in this case, somebody's skull.
Yeah, and just for the description, that just kept going through my head.
apparently something is killing off people, starting with Steve.
Nervy Steve.
I do like the fact that everyone in the Powerless State seems to have nicknames, because first disc we had Spider, and now we've got Brainy Betty, Nervy Steve, and there was Grumpy Eric.
Bored down to a single character trait.
He's a bit grumpy, that's his name.
And this character that's been developed with the claws, it touches you on the shoulder and there's no one there.
Mm-hmm. If you turn around and look, there's no one there.
Touches you on the shoulder a second time.
You turn round.
You're toast.
Well, as with Rory in Amy's Choice, a Hoover becomes a necessity.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that was Brainy Betty, wasn't it? Shall we get an ambulance? No, I think a Hoover may be more appropriate.
Was it Dan Starkey who played Mr. Fingers?
Yes, apparently. Oh, right. I didn't recognise him.
Well, he wasn't really that much of a speaking part.
No, Strax.
One bit that did make me chuckle was the idea that Betty and Jackie could put all this stuff in the janitor's room
and
it would still be there 31 years later.
Yeah. Well, it's still early on because whatever you do, don't phone your mum. Rose, don't phone your mum.
So what does she do?
And she phones
her mum.
We love Rose. Rose is just wonderful. But let's face it, she was a brat at the beginning.
Yeah, and she's still a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. She's 19 years old.
The book from the TARDIS library.
Oh, 1,000 mistakes you can make whilst time travelling. Well, she said, I've only made 3. How many have you made?
Who do you think wrote the blooming book?
I've lived on a couple of council estates in my time, and things left in place do not last 30 hours, let alone 30 years.
Well, I think they abandoned it fairly quickly.
Well, because
2012 was it? People left,
but they were in 2006.
Yes, yeah, so 6 years.
6 years it was stuck in the janitor's.
That's when people finally left, I think. So people were probably charitably gave up.
You've got to remember, the janitor's never going in the janitor's locker.
Yeah, but if I was a small kid, I'd be in there.
Rose was. That's why they put it in there.
And all those mirrors. There's stones outside.
I quite enjoyed this one. It's not that long.
It's an hour, I think.
It's an hour long. Mm. There is kind of like overtones of Father's Day with mucking about with time. And it doesn't quite explain where this creature thing comes from.
The hyphen, Mr. Fingers, or where
it goes to, or why it got there, what called it there. The fact that it seems to coincide with roughly the first time that the TARDIS turns up.
This is the second thing in a row which coincides roughly when the TARDIS first turned up. Yeah. I don't know if they're going somewhere with that.
Yeah. It's a creature that lives on many layers of the universe anyway. So
there's obviously something there that's going to be pulled out in the series as to what, why or what's attached itself, other than Sutek to the TARDIS.
It was a sad bit. Drone Boy, was it Eric? Mm. Ernie? Someone or other? Can't remember his name. But you didn't actually hear him die. Mm. You just, the drone got lost because it no longer had any brain waves.
But then he doesn't die anymore.
No, he doesn't. Though once he's all dealt with, he doesn't die. But it just suddenly the drone was lost and Ellis. Confused, so Ellis you knew he had gone.
Because the drone was tied to his brain waves. Yeah.
Also, yeah. We're talking about sad bits. There was, I won't say unnecessary, but it added another layer to Brainy Betty when she was talking about her daughter.
Oh, yeah. I feel there's more Brainy Betty than meets the eye.
Well, she's brainy for a start. And she worked out that note, that text.
Yeah. Could she be the Rani?
It was the bit at the end where she did that whole thing about in the spatial comfort. And it,
Betty.
She seems to have an idea, more an idea of things going on that maybe she should.
Yeah. Certainly more than Jackie does. Yes.
Who wrote this one?
This was Timothy X Attack. Well, that's what it says.
Okay. Well, whoever you are, this was a really good episode. Yeah.
There was no dead points. No. It trundled along at speed. There was nothing that lost me.
Yeah.
And as I said, you had quite a few fun moments, quite a few dramatic moments, and the occasional sad bit.
Yeah. And I didn't fall asleep.
But that's always a bonus.
Yeah.
Yes, I think originally these were recorded as if they were going to be a box set of three, probably. Mm-hmm. I think they were with Eccleston's earlier ones. So maybe the next one will be the end of the box set. So they might bring together the reason why things keep happening to the power state. I don't know.
And in keeping with the first season, we also got another wolf or bad wolf shout out.
Jackie said the big bad wolf, didn't she?
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah.
That one was a lot briefer than our other previous discussions. So that was, I forgot what it was called. Last Days of the Powell Estate. Tell us what you thought about it by writing to us via show.
At
staggeringstories.net.
Over to Jean, who I believe has a 30-second recommendation.
If any of you haven't already seen it, watch this season of Good Ship Murder. It is a little bit Midsummer Murders on board a cruise ship, but there's an episode entirely about a photographer, of rock singers, etc. And one Mr. Starkey is in the entire episode as a normal human being.
Oh my God, it's true.
Yes, it is.
If you type poop and shart and farten into translate.
What?
It's Hindi for full terms and conditions.
That's brilliant. That actually sums it up, doesn't it?
How do we get there from Manstocking?
I'm sorry, things occur to me occasionally.
What convoluted path did you have to follow?
Just don't go there.
Do we have any feedback?
No feedback.
No feedback. Write to us, people. It's not as if you don't know the address, but just in case you've forgotten it, it's show
staggering
stories.
I definitely know it's dot.
Well done.
Net.
Well done, team.
Oh, speaking of somebody who wants free feedback.
Oh, look, his hat is at a jaunty angle.
It is
today.
A jaunty angle. A rakish angle.
Yeah. Very casual.
What has Handles got on his head?
It's a baseball cap with Dugadoo.
Ah. 1, 2, 3.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
Inky dinky rinky. Squirt a lot.
Sandy and Valentino.
The goats.
Folded up and propped against a radiator, Clara.
Moomin.
Terence.
Yeah. Dave Zilla the Mighty.
A collection of like little mini mousies.
It's Yakko, Wacko and Dot.
And a goat with one eye bigger than the other.
And so many nebulas.
He's also got a little gaggle of Velmas, I've just noticed.
He does. We don't like to talk about them. Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
But never fear, in the next one, there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
L.
Languishing.
Largely.
Lollygagging.
In London, comes loping...
Lazily.
Towards lasciviously. Us.
Lugubriously.
Lugubriously.
You can only say words if you know what they mean. Thank you.
You've made him pout now.
I always make him pout for various reasons.
Until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Cheerio.
The problem with having an open mind is somebody always wants to come along and fill it.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 491, featuring Adam Purcell and Andy Simpkins, fake Keith, Gene Riddler, Jay and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
I would just like to point out, we have a timer set up, but never used.
We never do. It just looks like it's looking at us.
Yeah, mine's just
shocked.
If we're doing grudges, when we were coming back from somewhere, you poured boiling hot coffee all over me.
Which you mention every 5 minutes.
Yes, because it hurts.
Regardless.
Karen, how's your foot?
A bit sore in the cold weather.
Yeah.
That's a 40-year-old wound.
That is.
It's a war wound.
We were rough and tumbling, weren't we?
Oh, in our youth.
In our youth. And I moved, he moved, his knee came right down on my foot and there was a crack. And it didn't hurt at all, really. But
What cracked? Your foot or his knee?
It was something in my foot.
Yeah. Oh. She's claiming it was something, and I think it was something in my knee, but...
Do we have to say anything?
You do, yes.
Oh, why don't you pick on me?
Because you're nearest.
I don't like saying things. I'm sorry. I nearly said that with a straight face.
That's your opening just there.
Yeah.
Don't stop.
You need to silence.
Sponsor silence.
Right, you ready?
Take a deep breath.
3, 2, 1. Gotcha. Should we do it again so it's a bit longer?
What's it a bit longer, do
you?
Always. Right. Hey, sitting right here.
3, 2, 1, go. See, that was the opposite of longer. That was shorter.
Oh. Now we've got the outtakes lined up.
Right. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, you
are so easy to break.
Definitely heard sounds of the couch creaking then.
Right, Keith. Your participation.
Oh, you don't want me anymore? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right, Keith, pretend you're getting into a car.
I once was living at a place which had a cat named Clutch.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to make him depressed.
Oh, am I right in thinking my dad's first car was that Wyvern I was telling you about?
Yeah.
And it had a pulling out thing?
Had the choke.
Oh, that's a choke, is it?
Yeah, I had to pull out the choke.
And you weren't allowed to hang anything on it?
No. So quite often with those ones, you had to pull out the choke, turn the engine over, balance the clutch, and then depress the choke again.
You have to wait for it to warm up a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just need to drive it for about a mile before pushing it back in.
It was a strategic manoeuvre.
Yeah, I thought my first car had a choke at first. It had a little thing you pull out, but actually that was the reverse light.
I thought you were going to say it's a cigarette lighter.
Yeah. So I kept pulling out thinking it was a choke and it was actually the reverse light.
Oh, dear. So people behind you were like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Beep, beep, beep.
I learned something.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn?
Chariots of Fire.
Right. Ding, 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 ding.
That's it.
Ding.
The song, ding, 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 or the tune, is just a really, really fancy version of the Meatball song.
Yes, I saw that as well.
Yeah.
The Meatball song.
Music, please. No. Wait. Music.
Ding, 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 ding,
spaghetti.
All covered in cheese. I lost ding, ding, my ding, 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 when ding, somebody sneezed.
It rolled off the table and onto the floor. And then my poor meatball rolled out of the door. It rolled down the garden and under a bush. And then my poor meatball was nothing but mush.
I think we've done enough outtakes.
I always remember the golden advert, sort of a golden wonder version of that. Yes, on top of Old Smoky, you're covered in snow. I lost my golden wonder to a brave Navajo. Ow.
You crept up behind me.
So it was a racist song.
Never get away with
that. That was the 70s.
Different time, yeah.
That was on ITV most of the time. Every commercial break.
Well, let's face it, when we were kids, there was actually a programme called How.
And
oh, I used to love How.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was about how things were. Yeah. But they just still used How.
I actually vaguely remember that for some reason. Yeah.
Was it Jack Smithhurst?
Because it's like Magpie.
Yeah, Fred Dynage.
Fred Dynage, that was it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know of it. I don't think I saw it very much. It was ITV, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't really watch ITV.
you were a Blue Peter boy, were you?
Yeah.
Well, unless you watched BBC. Saturdays.
Magpie Crew!
Yeah. Oh, bloody hell. Two for joy.
Magpie, bloody hell.
Magpie! One for sorrow, two for joy. Three for a girl and four for a boy.
Five for silver, six for gold. Seven for a secret never to be told. Magpie.
Fred Dynage wrote and researched a book on Reggie Cray.
Really?
Yeah. I remember listening to an interview with him that he went for a haircut in a shop. And it's, you know, just normal barber's shop. Just walked in there for a haircut. The phone rang and it was Reggie Cray asking about his notes on the autobiography.
Oh, really?
So he had to answer very carefully.
He had to answer very quickly and very carefully. Yeah. The fact that they knew he was in a barber shop.
Yeah.
It was just a case of
no mobile phone.
Where someone had a cutthroat razor at his chin.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah. Back to the podcast.